Hello, everyone. I hope you can hear me today. I'm in a temporary office, and the computer's a little further away from my face than usual. Everything is changing. Oh, good. The sound is great. Yay. Everything is changing at my house. The open area where my office used to be, and many of you have been at my house, so you know where that office used to be. That is being turned into a gym. And then Danielle's bedroom is going to be my new office. Danielle's having a new house built, and in fact, she should close on the house this week. And so by this weekend, she'll be moving that bedroom furniture out of there. And next Monday, a week away, I have new office furniture being delivered, and that will be my office. But right now, while we're kind of in this in-between place where the gym's already started to be built, but I'm not yet into Danielle's room. I'm sitting in the guest room. Some of you have slept in this room. I'm sitting in the guest room just with a white craft table and a TV tray with on the side of me with stuff on it. And there's a bit of an echo in this room. And again, the computer is just the way it's all set up. It's a little further away from me. But I only have a week in here, so I'll spend the week in here just really enjoying being in this space for a week. I'm looking out the window. It's snowing now. None of the snow is sticking. It's melting as soon as it hits the ground, but I think it's supposed to continue to snow all night, and as it cools off outside, I'm certain that I will wake up to a snowy Pueblo in the morning. And then I think from what I've heard, it's going to snow all day tomorrow, too. So I guess we're having our version of a snowstorm, although Pueblo doesn't usually get a lot of snow. It'll be interesting to see how much we get. 8 inches is a lot for us, so we'll see how much we get. But we're in our version of a snowstorm right now. Oh, one thing I want to remind you of, and if I remember at the end of the hour, I'll say it again then because there'll be different people in the room then. But I want to remind you all that tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, we're going to gather here for meditation. We always gather here for meditation at that time. However, tomorrow is a little bit unique because people all over the world are going to be gathering at the exact same time, along with James Twyman and religious leaders in Syria along the Israel-Syria border. And they're having an ISIS-Syria peace vigil. And they've asked everyone to join them in prayer and meditation. And so we're going to do that in the sanctuary. He's asked us to stop for 10 to 15 minutes. Now, we have a half hour set aside. But if you can only come in for 10 minutes because you're at work or something and then you need to get back to your job, if you're able to come in and join us for 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes would probably be the most important. That's really when the 10 to 15 minutes is happening, is between the top of the hour and 15 minutes after the hour. So if you want to be in meditation with a worldwide group of people, he's calling it from the three Abrahamic religions, the Christians, the Muslims, and the Jews. However, I know that a lot of Buddhists are also participating, including at least one entire monastery with like 150 monks or maybe even 1,500 monks. I may be missing a zero there. I think the Dalai Lama has agreed to participate. I think that they've said that Pope Francis will receive a note about it, and he will probably participate. So if you want to be in meditation with everyone, please be here by the top of the hour, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, and then we will go for a full half hour. But if you need to leave after 10 or 15 minutes, that's fine. You will have met the request of James Twyman. What I'm going to do now is just play a tune to get us started. And this tune is actually one of my daughter's favorite songs, but I tend to just play whatever pops out at me, and this popped out at me. So this is by a band called We the Kings, and the name of the song is Find You There.
Cause I need you. it all, I knew I would find you there. Even when my heart stops, I keep looking, cause I knew I would find you there. You know I will find you, I'll find you, I will find you there. You know I will find you, I'll find you, I will find you there.
Even when my heart stops, I will keep looking because I will find you there. I think that's a lovely line. It indicates, as Laurie was talking about before, that there is no death. Otherwise, when my heart stopped, I couldn't keep looking, right? So even when my heart stops, I will keep looking because I know that I will find you there, right? Even when the sky falls and I've lost it all, I know I will find you there. It's a nice song. Sweet song. Thank you, Jasmine. All right, so tonight we are going to be looking at quote 702 from the Seven Steps to Awakening, and let me give you that link. Whoops, all kinds of freaky things are happening here. I guess you guys noticed I got kicked out of Pal Talk and then it wouldn't let me back in, but I made it back before the song was over. But freaky things are happening. All right, so 702, this is a fairly long quote from the Yoga Vasistha, Step 3 of the Seven Steps to Awakening. If you're like me, you might want to close your eyes while you listen. For me, especially if I'm listening to someone and what they're saying is a little bit long, it's easier for me to really listen with my heart if my eyes are closed. So if you think that you might be like me, this is a good time to close your eyes because this is a long quote. As long as the concepts born of ignorance persist, as long as there is perception of that which is not the infinite, and as long as there is hope in the trap known as the world, so long one entertains notions of mind, etc. As long as one considers the body as the I, and as long as the true self is related to what is seen, as long as there is hope in objects with the feeling, this is mine, so long there will be delusion concerning the mind, etc. So let me go straight to the journal. This is what is written at 702A, January 30th, 2013. So just one day, just 3 years and one day ago, right? Because today we're sitting here at January 31st. So this was January 30th, 2013 when this was written. If I believe I am a person, I will listen to mind, because I will also believe mind is my protector and my salvation. If I believe that objects are real, I will desire control, because I will perceive objects or circumstances that can save me and objects or circumstances that can harm me. If I believe my salvation is in the world, I will listen to mind's assessments of good and bad, wanted and not wanted. I cannot let go of listening to mind without letting go of attachments and beliefs. They keep me pinned to mind. So for me, this is pretty obvious now, but maybe it's not quite fully obvious to everyone that is listening. But the reason that we pay attention to the chattering mind is because we think, I'm a person and the world is real. And I have to keep myself safe, and I have to keep myself happy. These are my jobs. I have to keep myself safe, and I have to keep myself happy. If I don't do that, something terribly wrong is going to occur. And so I always have to be looking at the environment, determining what will make me safe, make me happy, what threatens my safety, what threatens my happiness. And I have to constantly assess it, constantly seek out that which I need for happiness and safety, that which I must avoid for happiness and safety. I have to control. I have to manipulate. I can't take a single day off all the time. This is what I have to do. And when this belief is in the mind, we're going to listen to the mind, because the mind is that computer that is going to try and fulfill our request by assessing everything, assessing everyone, determining what will keep us safe and happy, and what will get in the way of that, and what needs to be changed, and what needs to be controlled, and what needs to be manipulated. There's just no way that we can fully believe that I am the person and the world is real, and let go of mine too. And the reason for that, again, is because mind is promising to be the protector. Mind is assessing everything. Mind is determining what makes us safe, what makes us happy, what doesn't, what we need to do. So if we want to let go of mind, if we want to let go of being locked in a prison of chattering voice, then we also need to begin to work on letting go of the belief that I am a person and that the world is real. And I'm pausing for a moment because I started to say one thing. I started to say, I don't know a better way of doing that besides just focusing on awareness as much as possible. But the truth is, I didn't start with that step. And so maybe that step isn't right for everyone who's listening. The truth is, I started by looking at the ideas in my mind that were causing me to be unhappy. That's where I started, looking at the ideas in my mind that were causing me to be unhappy. Whether that unhappiness was being angry, being jealous, being frustrated, feeling fearful, feeling anxious, whatever. Whenever I was not happy, I would practice, as we talked about this morning in the sanctuary, I would practice root cause inquiry to find out why right now I am not happy. What belief am I actually believing that is causing my unhappiness in this present moment? And then I would just give my willingness for that belief to be healed. It was as simple as that. You know, people often say to me, well, once you drill down through root cause inquiry and you find the I am bad belief, or you find the I am unsafe belief, or you find the I am a body belief, you find one of these core beliefs, then how do you heal it? And the only real answer I have is you give your willingness for it to be healed. Now, it's true that as I gave my willingness for it to be healed, sometimes other steps were revealed for me. For example, with the I am bad belief, when I gave my willingness to be healed, it became revealed to me how often I judged myself. And I got this sense of a cup, right? A cup full of I am bad liquid. And what would happen is an event would occur that would trigger the I am bad belief. It would come up in the form of guilt or self-hatred or unworthiness or whatever form it came up in. I would practice root cause or anger, right? I would practice root cause inquiry on that upset, and I would find the I am bad belief. And then I would give willingness for it to be healed, because that's all I knew to do. And what started to happen was I started to see that that process that I was going through of doing the root cause inquiry, finding the belief, looking at the belief, was helping to empty the cup. It's like when I was doing that, I was pouring out a bit of the I am bad belief out of the cup. But then, lo and behold, I would turn right around and judge myself for the cleanliness of my house, judge myself for what I just said or didn't say, judge myself for the way my body looked, and start filling that cup back up again. It's kind of like I was letting the I am bad belief out and while at the same time filling it up. And I began to see that that would not be productive, that could go on forever. Oops, I'm losing my Pal-Talk connection again. Let's see what happens. Thank you. Yeah, I lost my Pal-Talk connection again. So as I was saying, I found that could go on forever, you know, kind of emptying out the belief but then filling it up again. So I came to realize that another thing I needed to do was learn to let go of judging myself. And then I also, through giving my willingness to heal, through giving my willingness to heal fear is how I discovered this. I discovered what you all know as the rest, accept, and trust belief. The rest, accept, and trust practice. I came to see that I needed to rest the mind, which means not believe the stories, accept the feeling so that I wasn't repressing it, and then trust that this is healing. And so as I gave my willingness to have false beliefs healed, other insights that I also needed to have came on their own. But it all started with giving my willingness. And as you all know, I spent years going through this primary practice of discovering false beliefs and letting them go through rest, accept, and trust, and any other corrections that I was guided to, like letting go of judgment. After 5 years, after 5 years of letting go of false beliefs in this way, Inner Ramana came to me. Now, this was actually before I knew it was Inner Ramana. It was many, many months before what we call the book of Inner Ramana began to come. But I know now that this was actually the first time Inner Ramana came to me in around April of 2008. And gave me a mantra and didn't tell me what to expect from the mantra, just told me to say this mantra as often as I remembered. And that mantra was, I am that I am. And I practiced that mantra with a lot of heart devotion. And what happened, it seems to me like after a month or 2 months of saying the mantra, is I began to notice a shift starting to occur, just a little. But I began to become aware of what we call awareness. Up until then, I had never even noticed awareness, which is such a funny thing because here we are aware all of the time. But I'd never noticed it. I only noticed, you know, my mind. And I began to notice awareness. And, of course, the teachings of Inner Ramana started coming the following February, teaching practices like surrender so there's less dependence on the mind, continuing to teach the I am that I am mantra, and also beginning the teachings of self-inquiry. And through the practice of the teachings of Inner Ramana, I became more and more and more and more aware of awareness. And so now, for me, It seems like the best way to let go of the belief that I am a person and the belief that the world is real is simply to rest in awareness. And I do my best to rest in awareness, whether I am in meditation or whether I am moving about. Maybe the only thing I don't know how to do is practice resting in awareness when I'm asleep. Like if a dream happens, I've not yet gotten to the point where in my dream resting in awareness happens. The dream just happens. So I don't know how to do it yet at that state. Maybe at some point it will start to happen in that state too. But whether I am in meditation or whether I am moving about, I like to rest in awareness. I suppose the way I rest in awareness in meditation is a little different than the way I rest in awareness when I'm moving about. When I'm in meditation, I practice focusing attention on awareness to the exclusion of everything else. And when I'm moving about in the world, I can't do that because I need to pay some attention to what I'm doing. Otherwise, I'd be walking into walls and such. So when I'm moving about in the world, the way that I focus on awareness, let me see if I can find a way to put this into words. Oh boy, this is going to be tough. I notice whatever is happening and whatever the body is doing. I notice it first, maybe. I mean, it's kind of simultaneous, but I notice it first, whatever the body is doing, whatever is happening, even whatever I'm thinking. And then I notice that is in awareness. I notice everything is in awareness. I notice that awareness is always present. And I just stay with that heart presence. And it's funny because I could be doing anything. You know, I think probably once upon a time, I think I imagined someone resting in awareness as looking a particular way. You know, maybe like Ramana Maharshi sitting back all peaceful with this grin on his face. And actually, I can be resting in awareness and be very involved in a business-like way in a meeting with someone. And I don't need to scold Jasmine anymore, at least I haven't for years. But when I used to need to get firm with her, I could get very, very firm with her and still be resting in awareness. Resting in awareness doesn't need to look a certain way. It's just noticing that all of this is happening in awareness and keeping that as a primary focus. And there's something in me, and this is highly intuitive. It's not at all mental, I don't think. There's something in me that just says, just keep doing that. Just keep focusing on awareness to the best of my ability, no matter what I am doing. And that alone is what causes the idea that I am a person and that the world is real to melt away. And I know that that is occurring because I'm sure some of you all, if not all of you all, have the same experiences. I know that is occurring because certainly there are many circumstances that come and go that at one time, you know, when there was full belief, I am a person and the world is real, that would have upset me, that I would have had to try and take control of. I would have had to grasp for something or avoid something. And now I'm able just to kind of let the whole story just be. You know, and so I know that there's some kind of something is changing. So let me read this journal entry again. 702A. If I believe I am a person, I will listen to mind, because I will also believe mind is my protector and my salvation. If I believe that objects are real, I will desire control, because I will perceive objects or circumstances that can save me and objects or circumstances that can harm me. If I believe my salvation is in the world, I will listen to mine's assessments of good and bad, wanted and not wanted. I cannot let go of listening to mind without letting go of attachments and beliefs that keep me pinned to mind. I'm going to move on to 702B. I think that's pretty clear. So I'm going to move on to 702B. 702B is very short. It says, to keep a weed from growing, one must extract the root. So I think this is pointing to that first practice that I told you I went through for 5 years. This is pointing to practicing root cause inquiry, finding what is at the root of my upset, and then starting by giving willingness for it to be healed. But as realizations come, for example, I have a husband. I don't, but maybe I have a husband, and maybe I'm just upset with my husband all of the time. You know, every evening I'm upset with him. I'm annoyed. He gets on my nerves. And maybe I drill down into that and I find out that I feel unloved. I feel unloved because he spends so much time watching TV. You know, he doesn't even seem to see me anymore. And I feel unloved. Well, then, what I need to do in that case is I need to start letting go of this belief that I am unloved, or this belief that I need to be loved, or I might even look deeper and again find the I am bad thought under that. But sometimes I don't think people need to go all the way to the bottom. Just the I am unloved is a great place for healing to start. So how can I actively let go of the belief that I need to be loved? Well, the way Regina Dawn Akers would have done that is remembering what she wants more, which was awakening or truth. Know thyself, I used to word it. And so the next evening when my husband is watching TV and not paying attention to me and I start feeling that anger or that annoyance coming up again, I would look at it and I would say to myself, this is that feeling that I need to be loved, that I want to be loved. What do I really want? To be loved or to know truth, to know thyself, to awaken? And I would do that every single time I noticed the feeling arising again. I would remind myself of what I want more. And just that gentle, gentle reminder of what I want more, eventually one day I will kind of miraculously notice that my husband hasn't changed at all, but suddenly I'm just happy as can be. It doesn't bother me at all that he is the way he is. And I have complete open and free love for him, and I never even give thought to, am I loved? You know, just the love that I have keeps me feeling in love, and there's nothing else that's needed, right? And I could probably sit here and talk all night long about different beliefs and different practices that might be helpful to letting go of those beliefs. I don't think I'm going to. Not tonight, anyway. But what's important to me in this journal entry, 702B, is the word root. This is important. This is what I want to talk about. To keep a weed from growing, one must extract the root. In other words, if I have a husband and I get angry at him because he's watching TV every night and paying me no attention at all, I don't become happy by throwing something heavy through the television screen. So that he can't watch TV. I didn't extract the root. I don't become happy by divorcing that husband and finding someone else, even someone who pays a lot of attention to me. because I didn't extract the root and it's just going to show up in another way. I don't become happy by nagging my husband every night, telling him over and over again how he needs to pay attention to me. It's not going to make me or him happy. The only way to come to happiness is to discover the root and extract the root. And of course, the problem with humans in general is that we don't do that. The problem with humans in general is that we try to manipulate, control, change the situation in some way. You know, thinking a better husband, a broken TV, a husband that's nagged into submission, something like that is going to work, and then, whew, then I'll be happy. And that's not true. So discovering the root cause of my upset is critical. I have to know why I'm upset first. And then giving willingness for that to be healed, that root. Not giving willingness for my husband to change. Not even giving willingness that I learned to be okay with him not loving me. I see spiritual students make that mistake. They'll say, okay, well, I've discovered that I feel unloved because my husband doesn't pay attention to me. I have decided to be okay with him not paying attention to me. Well, that's still not the root, you see. So I need to drill down through root cause inquiry or some other form of looking, if you know another form of looking, like the Byron Katie, the work, for example. Find the root of my upset and give willingness for the root to be healed. And any insights that come about my participation in that healing, like letting go of my self-judgment or asking myself, what do I really want? Or any other insight that comes, following through on that insight. And if I take these steps, then the root will be healed. And then that weed is replaced with a flower, which I will call happiness. Right? So to keep a weed from growing, one must extract the root. Now let me just pause for a moment and go back and read the original quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening that we are looking at tonight. As long as the concepts born of ignorance persist, as long as there is perception of that which is not the infinite, and as long as there is hope in the trap known as the world, so long one entertains notions of mind, etc. As long as one considers the body as the I, and as long as the self is related to what is seen, as long as there is hope in objects with the feeling, this is mine, so long will there be delusion concerning mind, etc. So just using my little made-up example, if I had a husband, then I found I was upset because I didn't feel loved. I thought I needed to feel love even more. And so I start helping myself to let go of the belief that I need to be loved by asking myself, really, well, what do I really want? Do I really want to be loved or do I want awakening, right? And noticing that I want awakening more. And eventually that thought that I need to be loved just kind of dies from my lack of believing it. Well, then my mind is going to be a little freer. I may still have other stuff but that I'm believing and focusing on, but because this one belief has died, my mind is going to be freer. I'm no longer doing the dishes at night thinking about how I need to divorce this man. And if I divorce this man, how am I going to support myself? And, you know, what kind of a divorce agreement should I ask for? And how would I go about finding a lawyer? All that, whatever that stuff was that used to be in my mind around this idea that my husband doesn't love me and I need to be loved. Once that I need to be loved thought has died, that whole chunk of thinking is no longer there. Now I'm just doing the dishes while he's watching TV. It's simple. And every time we heal a false belief or heal an attachment, another chunk of stuff that used to spin in the mind gets thrown out. And the mind becomes clearer and quieter with each thing that we let go of. Let's move on to 702C. If I believe I am the body, I believe I am vulnerable. If I am vulnerable, I need protection. Nothing claims to be my protector more than the mind. Part of the root that must be extracted is the belief I am a body. This kind of reminds me of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane when he went into the garden to let go of his fear of being arrested and what might happen next. I don't know if he knew about the crucifixion or didn't, but he certainly knew it was a possibility or something like that, being beaten, imprisoned, right? And so he has this fear, and the fear is really around the body. And so he goes into the garden to let go of this fear. He feels like he did the letting go. He comes out and he finds himself getting upset at John and James and Peter because they fell asleep when he asked them to keep watch. He wanted them to keep watch and keep his body safe, keep his body from being arrested until he had fully let go of the I am the body belief. So when he came back out and was mad at them because they fell asleep, he realized, well, this means I have not yet let go of the I am the body belief. Here I am mad at them for not staying awake and keeping me safe. So he goes back into the garden and he goes through this whole process of praying and letting go again. He comes out, they're still sleeping. He notices annoyance. He realizes he's not done. He goes back into the garden, right? But the first time he came out of the garden and he was angry with them. Do you remember what he said before he went back into the garden that first time? He said, "The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Right? The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. And what that says to me is that this I am the body belief is a very, very strong attachment. So how do we let go of this I am the body belief? I don't really know if I know the answer. I'll just tell you that right up front. I don't know if I know the answer. But it seems to me, at least where I am now, that again, this resting in awareness is a critical part of that. Because as we rest in awareness, what seems to happen is at some intuitive level, we begin to realize I am awareness. And we can't actually be awareness and the body too. So as this intuitive connection begins to happen, where we begin to see ourselves as awareness, at the same time then, the I am the body belief is growing weaker, is becoming detached. I don't think we can force ourselves to let go of the I am the body belief. I don't think there's a magic formula. I think we just rest in awareness. And then by what we call grace, whether it seems slowly and gradually or whether it seems boom all of a sudden, somehow that belief dies. I certainly cannot claim to be free of the I am the body belief. But I can claim that it's weakened, and I know that it's weakened. I know that it's weakened because I noticed that the thoughts around the body have changed. Again, remember I told you that if the belief is I need to be loved, and then we work on that belief and that belief dies, now our thinking also changes. There's like this space in our thinking where we used to worry about, you know, how am I going to divorce my husband? That whole space is freed up now, right? Well, the same thing starts to happen as Francine, please tell your daughter I'm teaching right now. She wants to know why I'm not answering her texts. This whole thing seems to happen too with the body. Like once upon a time, I can most definitely tell you, I had lots and lots of thoughts about the body every day. Lots and lots of thoughts. The mind was very occupied with thoughts about the body. And I was younger then. I can only imagine, what that might have been like as I started to age. You told her, okay. I can only imagine what that might have been like as I started to age, you know, what might have happened with that thinking. But what I find now is that my mind is not really overoccupied with I am the body thoughts. I mean, they do show up. In fact, they show up strongest when the body seems to be possibly in imminent danger right now. You know, like if I get in the car with someone who I perceive as a very unsafe driver, and then I might start noticing some thoughts about, wow, could you like back off of that car in front of us? You know, we're going 80 miles an hour and you're right on his butt. You know, I mean, I might start noticing those kinds of thoughts, and that's how I know that the I and the body belief is still there. But my mind is not occupied all of the time with I am the body thoughts like it used to be. There's space there. And so what I assume, and please hear the word assume here, is that some kind of a weakening or a detaching has already begun because of the change in the mind, right? If I was as attached to the I am the body belief as I used to be, there would probably still be just as much thinking as there used to be about the body, and keeping the body safe, and keeping the body healthy, and keeping the body beautiful. But because there isn't a lot of concern there, only in certain more imminent circumstances, right, that belief must be weakening. Someone asked me the other day, can I say that this belief has been healed? Talking about a belief that she had. Can I say that this belief has been healed? And I said, I usually don't practice saying very quickly that a belief has been healed. Only after I've gone literally many years and many, many circumstances that have come up that I know would have triggered that belief before. And now the belief is never, ever triggered, and it's been many years. Although they're not really tests, we could call it passing tests. Then I might say that a belief has been healed. And yet some of the beliefs that I feel have been healed for me are like the belief in rejection, the belief in betrayal, the I am bad belief itself. But the only way to really tell if something is healed is when your mind is no longer focused on thoughts along that manner, and nothing can trigger thoughts along that manner. You know, like I don't worry about at all whether you guys like me or not, what you think about me, whether you think I'm wise or unwise, you know, egotistical or awakened. Whether you're really happy to listen to me when I speak, or if you wish I'd shut up and you're just waiting for the next person, I don't have any of those thoughts. And so I know that the root of those thoughts, which would be the I am bad belief, is just not there. I can make mistakes, and I can see my mistake, and I can apologize for my mistake, and I can correct my mistake without feeling guilty. You know, I don't think I'm bad because I made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. That's what happens. And I also know that it's healed, or at least it seems to be healed, because I also don't think those thoughts about other people. I don't think that you are bad or you are guilty or you are unworthy. I can see you make mistakes. I can know that you're suffering because of a thought that you're holding on to. But I don't think you're bad or guilty or unworthy, right? I'm not projecting it. But even when I do say, you know, I'm healed of the belief in rejection, I'm healed in the belief of betrayal, I'm healed in the belief of I am bad, there's a part of me that's kind of saying, desho. Desho is a Japanese word that means something kind of like, unless I'm not. You know, maybe someday I'll learn that I was wrong. Something will happen. You know, like what if I, you know, drove my car and hit a child and killed them? Would that bring guilt up? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe a lot of compassion, a lot of concern and no guilt. But how do I know? And I certainly don't wish those tests on myself or anyone else. But I know that even though the way things are going seems like certain thought patterns that used to be a part of my daily life, it seems like they are gone and they are good and gone. I know that maybe it's not completely true that they're 100% healed. Maybe there's a little piece in there that's still dormant that just the right circumstances could bring it up again. Doesn't mean that they will. I remember one time Danielle and I were walking to the lake with Jamie, and this other dog who happens to be in love with Jamie was following us. And I didn't want the dog following us because I knew that we were going to be walking at one point along a busy road, and Jamie was on a leash, but this other dog wasn't. And so I was yelling at the dog and kind of trying to chase it home, trying to, you know, make it not follow us. And what I said to Danielle was, I couldn't bear to watch a dog get hit by a car today. Well, I was able to chase that dog off, and he went back home. And only about 5 or 10 minutes later, Danielle and I are on this busy street, and we see what we think is, later we turned out, it turned out not to be true, but that doesn't matter. We see what we think is a dog getting run over by a truck. And I didn't react at all the way that I thought I might. You know, the fact that I wouldn't be able to bear to see that. Instead, all that happened was I immediately started looking around trying to figure out where this dog might have come from, where might its house be, where might we get it help. It was a very practical point of view that I had instead of some other point of view that I thought I might have. Now, just so you know, as it turns out, the dog wasn't hit by the truck. He jumped out of the truck because he wanted to come and be with us because he saw Jamie. And he was hurt a little bit when he jumped out of the truck. But the way we saw it, because we weren't really paying that much attention, it looked like the truck hit him. But actually, he jumped out of the truck, and the owner did come back looking for him. But the point of my story is when we imagine, if I saw this, I would react in such and such a way, we're actually imagining. We don't know how we will react. You know, so maybe, you know, if something happens that at one time would have brought up enormous guilt, maybe in me it won't, but I don't know that. So I remain humble, realizing I don't know that. And if something did happen one day where there was a lot of guilt or a lot of fear or anything else, I would simply return to the original practices that healed it as much as it did. I would return to, if necessary, root cause inquiry. If I didn't see the root right away, I would return to giving my willingness for it to be healed. I would return to rest, accept, and trust. I would return to looking at and letting go of judgments, or in a different circumstance, asking myself, what do I really want? I would return to all of those beginning practices, so that the healing could continue now that something has happened to bring it up some more. Again, what we're looking at right now is 702C. If I believe I am the body, I believe I am vulnerable. If I am vulnerable, I need protection. Nothing claims to be my protector more than the mind. Part of the root that must be extracted is the belief I am a body. And as I said, as far as I know, the best way to start allowing that belief to be healed is to focus on awareness. But I'm by far not the expert on that. So, because I will never tell you, at least not at this point, say the I am the body belief has been healed. I know that that is not true. 702D. Existence is fact. Isness or beingness is real. However, if beingness is associated with an object as this is me, delusion persists and reality is not known. Associating fact with object is a part of the root that must be extracted if one is to be free of the suffering of mind. Again, associating fact with object is a part of the root that must be extracted if one is to be free of the suffering of mind. So one object, of course, is I am the body. And, you know, bodies age, right? So if I have a lot of thinking around, I am getting so old, what am I going to do about these wrinkles? Oh my gosh, you know, whatever. I don't know what thoughts, because I don't have thoughts about being old. I don't know what other thoughts there might be. I don't think about it. But I know a lot of people are very worried about getting old, right? Whatever thoughts occupy the mind. What I'm really doing there is I'm taking isness, existence, and I'm associating it with the body. Again, when I'm resting in awareness, I'm breaking that association. If I did have lots and lots of thoughts about aging, whatever those thoughts are, I'll just go with wrinkles because that's the only one I can think of. So let's say I'm very, very worried about the wrinkles around my eyes and my mouth and wherever else they're appearing. I'm thinking about wrinkles a lot. What I might do if it was me is I might rest in awareness and watch the thoughts about wrinkles as objects. When I rest in awareness and watch the thoughts about wrinkles as objects, I am disassociating from them. They're not my thoughts. They're not me thinking. They're thoughts. And I'm being aware, being awareness. In fact, I would say that at least now, my primary practice is simply resting in awareness with everything. You know, any thought that shows up, any feeling, any emotion that shows up, any feeling in the body that shows up, anything that the body is doing, anything that's in my awareness at all. Like a while ago, I was talking to you all about the snow and how it was melting as it hit the ground. I just like to rest in awareness with it all. Be aware that it's in awareness. Be aware. Be aware of the awareness. Be aware of awareness all of the time. And the more that we practice that, the more we seem to detach from everything else naturally. We don't have to make ourselves detach, it just starts to happen. And so then we aren't associating ourselves with an object. We're not associating ourselves with an emotion. We're being aware of the emotion. We're not associating ourselves with thoughts. We're being aware of the thoughts. We're not associating ourselves with body pains. We're being aware of the body sensations. You know, we're not associating ourselves with what we're doing. We're watching what's being done. There's a shift that happens as we just rest in awareness, and nothing outwardly needs to change. It's just how we're being present with it. That's what changes. So again, 702D, existence is fact. Isness or beingness is real. However, if beingness is associated with an object, as this is me, delusion persists and reality is not known. Associating fact with object is a part of the root that must be extracted if one is to be free of the suffering of mind. And you might even be able to see, maybe, how this is beyond even the I am bad belief. Right? This is pulling back so that we're not associating life or isness or awareness with anything at all. And yet letting everything be as it is. I'm going to move on. I have one more. We have 2 minutes, and there's one more, 702, 702E. So let me read that. A vulnerable body self acquires in order to feel safe. It may acquire family or friends or money or knowledge or health or power or adventures or material objects. However, it cannot acquire that which is eternal. So all acquiring is illusory safety. Desiring illusory safety is a part of the root that must be extracted. In other words, it's really, really helpful for us to notice when we are acquiring anything because we think it will make us feel safe or happy. And it doesn't necessarily even mean you won't go ahead and acquire it. You might not. But maybe if you can just shift into awareness and from awareness watch the acquiring happen. You might notice yourself acquiring travel, acquiring friends, acquiring things, acquiring money. But as you rest in awareness watching the acquiring, you may start to notice that the attachment to the acquiring is somehow dying anyway. It's being severed anyway. And then naturally the energy that was there and the thinking, remember? You can always check for the thinking. Are you still thinking about acquiring all of the time? Are you still thinking about how to get the next new thing or how to get more money or how to get more people to like you? If the thinking is dying, the attachment is also dying. And with that said, I am done, so I'm going to release the mic, and I'll be back in 2 hours for today's daily contemplation. Bless you all.